The Song of Solomon, chapter 8. I think it is a very unhelpful approach to take to the Song of Solomon to say that this whole song is this idyllic love song between Solomon and some Egyptian girl, and it all looks forward to the love of Jesus for his bride. Well, there are points at which that may be pressed, and maybe that is the idea in some places. But overall, this is a romance that is absolutely fraught with all kinds of difficulty. They have this tension all the time, the daughters of Jerusalem, who are mocking the Egyptian girl, and she can't openly associate with Solomon. They have to meet up secretly. They have sex, clearly enough, out in the countryside. And she's attracted to Solomon, but she desperately wants him to come and live with her in Egypt. And in the end, here in chapter 8, you see the whole thing breaking up, and in fact, him going off with somebody else and her getting very bitter about it. So this, well, one simple takeaway from all this is simply this, that illicit relationships don't work. It's as simple as that, and this did not work out, and let that be a warning to all of us. So then, she starts in verse 1, "Oh, that you were like my brother." She so wishes that he was an Egyptian. She's spoken elsewhere about how she so wishes that he could come to Egypt, and she does again here. Verse 2, "I would lead you, bringing you into my mother's house, who would instruct me." She's under the instruction and influence of her Egyptian mother. She wants him to come and live with her. And this is the way of all relationships where there is ultimately a spiritual imbalance. In the end, it does not work out very happily, and in this case, it breaks up. Now, the daughters of Jerusalem, I suggest, are the Israelite women who really were the legitimate source of a wife, really, for Solomon. She tells them, verse 4, as she often does, "You daughters of Jerusalem, I adjure you not to stimulate my love." In other words, don't you go around making yourselves attractive to him. She's bitter with them, and they are bitter to her. And then the daughters of Jerusalem say in verse 5, "And who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved?" Now, Solomon is the beloved. That's what his name means in Hebrew. They're saying to her, have a look to the wilderness. And what is there? Well, there is a wedding procession. And Solomon is coming up out of the wilderness with another woman. And this woman who he's going to marry is a minor. The daughters of Jerusalem say that she's a little sister. She's our little sister. She's one of ours. She's a daughter of Jerusalem. She has no breasts. But we are going to build her up. And she says, the Egyptian girl says, "I was a wall, and my breasts were like towers, and then I found acceptance in his eyes." Well, she's saying, "I'm a mature woman, and he found my breasts attractive. I was once acceptable to him." And she gets very bitter, and it's difficult to actually work out precisely what she's on about, but she says in verse 11, "Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon." Baal Hamon means lord or husband of a multitude. And she talks about getting that he got 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. Well, he had, in the end, 1,000 wives, 700 wives, 300 concubines, we're told. And I think that must be in view. And elsewhere in the song, particularly in chapters 6 and 7, she's described her virginity or sexuality anyway as a vineyard into which Solomon has come. And now she realizes that all his talk to her that she is so unique is actually not so. She likens her breasts to grapes. And now she says, verse 12, "My own vineyard is mine alone. The 1,000 are for you, Solomon." So, all right, yeah, I see, you've got all these other women. Well, that's it. I'm splitting up from you, and my vineyard, my body, my sexuality, my grapes, which she's used as a sort of a euphemism for sex, etc., earlier in the song, these are now mine alone. And then he says, apparently, in verse 13, let me hear your voice. It's like he still wants her to come back. And she says, verse 14, go away. Be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. Clear off. Run away from me. And that is the strange ending of the song. We are set up to expect that a romance ends in marriage. That's how the classical path is, that there is a romance and then there is a marriage. But here there is this breakup in bitterness and the approach of a wedding procession. And the idea of the approach of it coming up out of the wilderness is, I think, that she is seeing him preparing to marry a young girl from the Daughters of Jerusalem. And she says, he says in verse 6, set me as a seal on your heart. Jealousy is as cruel as the grave. Love is strong as death. He's saying to her, you know, oh, yeah, but I still love you. And she's saying, as if. No way. My vineyard is mine alone. You're Baal Hamon, lord or husband of a multitude. You've got 1,000 women, haven't you? Now my vineyard is going to be mine alone. Run away. Get lost. Go away. So the whole thing ends in bitterness. And the whole attraction between the two is all very physical, is it not? A lot of talk about sex, a lot of talk about bodies and how adorned beautifully she is, etc. And all that is surface attraction. Now he has tried to see in her the Israelite wife. He describes her in terms of the geographical features of Israel, as if she is an Israelite girl, rather like somebody starts dating somebody who's an unbeliever and they're a believer, but they like to imagine that this man or this woman are in fact a very spiritual person, and they're not. It's not where their heart is. And so in the end, there is a breakup with bitterness, etc. And this is what happens. The wider lesson, I think, of Solomon is that just going after the desire of your eyes does not satisfy. He says later in Ecclesiastes that he did whatever his eyes told him to do. He did not restrain himself. He says this. But then he also concludes that the eye is not satisfied with seeing. And this, I think, then, whatever the fine points of interpretation of this difficult chapter, really, I think the takeaway is illicit relationships don't satisfy, and also just wishing to see in others something spiritual when it's not there is also not going to satisfy. And going after the desire of your eyes is not going to satisfy. In the end, the way of God has got to be followed. And if we are going to be in intimate relationship with somebody who does not have that set of values, it's not going to be fulfilling in the final end. And so what are we to make of this? Well, why is there so much information about Solomon? There's a huge amount of information about him in the historical records, in Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. I think it's all there for a purpose, to show us that really, in the end, this man was given the choice of everything. He eagerly and greedily took it. He did whatever his heart told him to. He would have worn, as it were, a t-shirt that said, just do it, and he just did it. He followed his heart, as people keep telling you to do. Oh, follow your heart, do what you think's right. Well, no, there has to be a higher authority. The heart is deceitful, and we deceive ourselves. And as I say, he's really a tragic figure in the end. He is the classic case of somebody who would not practice any level of self-control or self-discipline, and who would not put God and God's ways above the sight of his own eyes. And this is where that ends. Now, I notice that the Bible does not present us with a list of sort of stellar examples of people whose lives worked out. Rather, do we get all these continual negative examples of don't do this, don't do that. And in terms of modern education, that would be seen as a very wrong way to go about things. Show people the examples that worked. But instead, so much of the Bible is taken up with Israel and examples of men like Abraham and David who were believers but had very weak aspects to their lives. You're not given any stellar examples of obedience and spirituality and successful spiritual living. And you wonder, why is that? And I think it's partly to sort of set the scene for the Lord Jesus, that there in the New Testament we see him who was perfect. And I think it's also partly because if God was to give us a whole load of biographies, of stellar examples of righteousness, well, we're sinners and we fail. And actually the example of stellar spiritual people is not an awful lot of comfort to you and me who are not perfect and who are not stellar examples and who do fail. And I think that's why you see examples of sinners, people who go wrong, like Solomon, and we are to learn from that. And you also see examples of people who, as I say, like Abraham, David, and very many others, who were believers, but weak believers, who will be saved by grace. That's the choice, I'm afraid, between people who messed it up and turned away, lost it, failed, Israel, Solomon, etc., and people who were believers but were weak and messed up and yet were saved by grace through faith, David, Abraham, etc. That's our choice, and that is, yeah, I can understand that, why God has chosen to give us so much negative exemplification, if you like. And above all, it sets the scene, it sets the stage for the appearance of the Lord Jesus, who, having our nature, was absolutely perfect.